life's gone down the drain. Your body's wrecked with pain. There's just one thing to blame. Dynamite in the brain.
You are listening to Dynamite in the Brain with Brian Smith and Anthony Askew. Tonight's episode, the Katsuhiro Otomo's 2004 animated motion picture, Steam Boy. Thanks for listening. On today's show, we have no guest. It's just us two.
Yeah.
Kicking the real back Steam Boys. And talking Steam.
Yeah. So, Steam yeah. Steampunks, finally.
This is what it said, apparently, on the release. From the leader in anime, Katsuhiro Otomo, open brackets, Osamu Tezuka's Metropolis, comma, Memories, close brackets, comes his first feature-length directorial project since his breakthrough film, Akira.
All right, there it is. I was worried there.
Yeah, I was worried when I started reading it. Right? That seems a bit odd picking those things. 10 years in the making with a total budget of $22 million, Steam Boy is the most expensive Japanese anime production ever. A retro science fiction epic set in Victorian England, Steam Boy features an inventor prodigy named Ray Steam, who receives a mysterious betel ball containing a new form of energy capable of powering an entire nation, the Steam Ball. Young Ray Steam must use the Steam Ball to fight evil, redeem his family, and save London from destruction. With more than 180,000 drawings and 400 CG cuts, Steam Boy is one of the most elaborate animated features ever created. Steam Boy will be brought to life with an outstanding ensemble voiceover cast, including Anna Paquin, X-Men, Patrick Stewart, X-Men, and Alfred Molina, Spider-Man 2, which gives you an idea of when that back cover was written. Yeah, that's off the back of the Sony DVD release. But because we were watching the recent manga release, which is just out on Blu-ray, but is also on Netflix, is the uncut version, and so they couldn't include the dub because that was a cut version. So we did not get to hear Anna Paquin's Manchester accent.
What a shame!
Or did you watch the dub?
No, okay. I didn't. Not this time.
I remember it being good.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't, like, on paper, you think, Anna Paquin, that's Ray Steam. But I can't remember it being, like, stand out in a way that you frown at.
No, I remember being pleasantly surprised when I rented it from the video shop way back in the day. I do have that DVD somewhere lying around, but as it turned out, same. We were very lucky. And the film went up on Netflix this week, and so that avoided me having to dig out the DVD.
Nothing worse.
And, well, yeah, possibly, except, of course, I've now seen the full-length thing, and about a quarter of a way hour towards the end, I was thinking, boy, this could do with a quarter of an hour cut out of it, which I believe is what the dub had.
I need to know what was different.
I've got to imagine there's a lot less staring at steam dials and turning of wheels.
I don't know, though. Perhaps.
I mean, my memory is that last chunk with the family trying to get the tower out of London, or at least out of residential area of London.
Mm-hmm.
I see, my recollection is that was a lot quicker.
See, I've never got that far before.
Oh, so that's a good segue into our opinions before this rewatch. So, Anthony.
Yes, I had seen it before. Way back when I bought the DVD, and I didn't get very far. I think I watched to the point where Ray first gets the ball, and there's that chase scene, and then I stopped watching it.
I was going to say, which chase scene?
Well, it's one big chase scene, I think, but the one where he's in that weird wheel.
So that with the train where he meets
Robert Stevenson. It was around that point in the film, I was like, this ain't for me. I turned it off. I thought it was boring. And I never liked it. Well, I never got as far as to say if I liked it or disliked, but I didn't like it enough to keep watching. So this time round, I didn't know what to expect. I thought, oh God, I'm not looking forward to this. And I didn't like it again. I didn't like this film. I think technically it's outstanding, but I just think it, story-wise, it is incredibly dull. I don't like, I think the characters are so plain, and the tiny, you get a tiny little bit of emotion at the odd time, and it's quickly kind of pushed under a carpet, and no, look back at these dials and cogs, and let's talk about Steam some more.
So,
I didn't like it.
Okay, well, interesting podcast coming up. When I first saw it, I think there was already negative buzz about it, of people not enjoying it. And I watched it and I was like, what are they complaining about? This is a perfectly good film. That is kind of my opinion still, except for having watched the full version. I will say, as I said, it's a little too long. Like, the length that they cut out for the dub is how too long it is. But yeah, I've got no problem with the lack of emotional content. I'm just happy for it to be all action, all the time. We've got this MacGuffin, the steam ball. Everybody wants it. Ray's got to go and say, well, my granddad told me not to give it to these guys. And he also told me my dad's dead. Turns out my dad's not dead. But also it turns out the person who I thought I was supposed to give it to, they're just as bad as the guys I wasn't supposed to give it to. And then if you hadn't picked up on the theme, the granddad explains it all right at the end. But even he doesn't come off looking
as the good guy.
As a good guy. Yeah, no. Ray, it's ultimately like telling you the overriding theme is about scientists having to behave ethically. But there is this underlying theme of don't be a blind patriot, don't be a blind supporter of your parents or your grandparents. You question what they've got going on as well. But the thing is, I can see your point, because at no point does Ray really have a problem with that question. He quickly comes around to that point of view very quickly.
Yeah. I just think it's... I get what you say. On paper, this whole chasing around after this steam, it sounds fun, but it's not fun. Some of the set pieces look really good.
Everything gets destroyed. It's constantly destroying everything. So,
because it's non-stop, you don't get any magnitude.
They sit down for dinner at one point. The bit where he's saying...
At the very start?
No, in the middle, when he's kidnapped, and he's saying, I've been kidnapped... When he sees his dad's back, that his dad's
A weird. Because I didn't know how kind of fantasy this was going to go. So I was like, is the dad actually dead and he's been kind of reanimated by the power of steam?
Well, I think that's supposed to win it, because obviously it is. That is kind of part of the. I would say some of the theming is that the people who are funding him are presenting his science as being more magical than it actually is.
That's true.
That is part of the theme of the film. At first you wonder, like, yeah, has he been turned into a robot? But I think he's supposed to want to. He's lost a hand, is basically what it all amounts to, and he's got some scarring
on
his face.
And he's got awful hair.
I was like, oh, he's so vain as to cover up the presumably scalding on his face.
And yet, he won't shave his head.
He won't get a wig or shave his head, Well, shaving maybe his head might still be quite sensitive.
True, that's a good point.
But at the same time, I also wonder whether that was his choice at all by the end, once you've got the guys in their penguin armour. Pretending to be
maybe he just wants to look like a mad scientist.
Yeah, quite possibly.
Aesthetic. But yeah, there's just, and I'll tell you what: the instant that Miss Scarlet shows up, the rich,
she's great. She's like
daughter or whatever she is
from Charlie and the Chocolate Factory type girl.
But yeah, which at the time, which is fine, but she turns out to be, weirdly, the only character that I give a shit about. And she's introduced by punching a dog. And I was like, oh my god, don't expect me to even remotely turn on this character for the positive. But somehow, you do.
Yeah, that's a great bit of leaning into how awful she's supposed to be. But yeah,
that is the worst thing they could have shown.
Yeah, she's beating up a chihuahua. Mm-hmm. That is when we first meet her. But yes, yeah, no, you're right. She does get the because obviously she's in charge of this big foundation, but then her supposed right hand man is manipulating it all to do weapons deals.
Yeah. But she does. There's a bit I want to. Sorry, I'm diving around, but just the one bit of emotion or kind of draw to the characters is Ray and her when they're in like this factory or abandoned, not necessarily abandoned, but an unmanned factory looking for a part. I think I can't remember. Oh no, it's a part for the Chihuahua's runny toy machine. Can you remember? It's like a, what do you call them? You know what a hamster runs in?
Yeah.
It's a running wheel.
Hamster
what are
wheel.
They called?
Hamster wheel.
But she's got one for the dog. Anyway, it needs a part. They go and find the part. There's a bit where those two are stood in front of mirrors, and there's like this really sweet moment where it's like the start of a romance. And like, I think she wants to dance, and there's a point where I thought they were going to kiss, and then I was like, oh, this is where it's going to go. He's going to say no now, and they'll kind of... They'll bond as the film goes on. But no, they didn't. They kind of bonded.
He's British. He hasn't got time for that. He's got to keep his stiff upper lip.
Oh, God. Yeah. What nationality is she?
She's American.
American. From the O'Hara Foundation, if I recall.
Yes, her name is Scarlett O'Hara. It's not subtle. Raced. Just.
Is that an American name, is it?
It's the name of the lead from Gone with the Wind.
Oh, okay. There's some deeper stuff going on, but too deep that I didn't notice.
I think that's pretty top surface.
I don't even know if I've seen Gone with the Wind. A few famous lines, but that's it.
I was going to say, I'm pretty sure I've not seen all of Gone with the Wind, but I'm pretty sure I'm aware that the main character is Scarlett O'Hara.
Right, it maybe rings a bell. But that's the one bit of emotion, and I don't know, they try and... It just goes nowhere. It goes everywhere, but in a way that I don't care. Because it's got all these chases and everything's going on. And I was past caring about the bloody the steam ball. Though you do see a soldier, a dead soldier, where Scarlett is walking along and she realises inside the tin men that are being produced, there's actually people inside there. And you see it. And I was like, wow, I'm surprised they showed that. You know, when there's like an explosion, one of them goes flying. And I was like, wow, that's quite a dark moment. Give me more of that. But no. Back to steam getting shot and puffs of smoke everywhere. And the fatality count in this film must be astronomical. It's like that's not a criticism, but that's an observation. So many people must die in this film.
Yeah, I'd imagine so. Because there's a giant steam tower crashes on part of London.
There's hot steam pluming into people in the streets.
Oh, it's cold, remember? It's cold because they explode.
Well, they'd probably freeze up.
Yes, they're more worried about that. Yeah, but David takes it right in the face at one point and he's fine.
Yeah, he's all right, isn't he? Yeah.
After he's lost his mind. But it's quite bloody right from the start when...
It is.
Yeah. Because it's trying to give you an idea of how dangerous this time period was, but then add a layer of crazy science fiction on top of it.
I mean, I like what they're trying to do, and as I say, technically, it looks out. When I realised it was 2004 or whatever it is, I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe it's that old.
Yeah, the physical CG stuff looks good. There's a few spots where they're using it. There's like some CG train tracks of just shots of the train track, which don't look great. But the actual models of all the big steam mechanical stuff looks excellent still today.
Yeah, they fit in perfectly.
And the colour design, which apparently is, I think I read ages ago, is a big part of what it took 10 years to make, because he was just obsessed with the fact that he had like however many... thousands of colours now to play with. It's fantastic. I was watching this and you go, oh yeah, not all films have to be orange and teal. You can make them in other colours apart from that.
Well, it's a very brown film.
I think that's, if you're not thinking about it, that's your initial... I think it's brown in Manchester. And then the colours shift slightly. But I think while But I still think it's very colourful. It's just the colours are all down in a particular pastel end of the palette, colour palette.
Mm.
Apart from the reds, because obviously they've made a definite decision to make all the reds pop. Mainly on Scarlet, but you've also got that big red claw that one of those two guys keeps on using. The two henchmen who begin to take things overly personal, one of them does.
I do love the colours in the village at the start. Like the attention to detail of those houses and the little tiles on the roof is...
That's Manchester, not a village.
Is it? Yeah. Well, it's wherever they are, it's not in the centre of Manchester. Well, it may have been then, I don't
know. Or do you mean right at the start when they're in Alaska?
When you see Ray's, like when he's, his house basically, wherever he lives.
Yeah.
Like, I think that looks lovely. And it looks so homely and I think that, like, as I say, the attention to detail there is, you can't help but applaud, really.
I mean, you're right. I don't think it's going for any particular emotional arcs. If there's one there, it's about fathers and sons. But at the same time, by you get to the end credits, it does feel like a sequel, of which they were told you're not allowed to make any more of these films. As they cover many films worth of material in the closing credits.
So you actually think they wanted to make a sequel?
I don't know, but that's what those ending credits is like. It's like they definitely felt like they had to tell you the rest of the story of these characters. Because they look like very different films. It becomes more of a pulp adventurer where he does actually appear to go around as a superhero called Steam Boy.
Yeah.
And you get that like shot of like a Moriarty or Phantomus or Lupin character shown from behind as if to say, oh, who's that mysterious villain? What's he up to? Oh, we're never going to find out. Because you took 10 years to make this film.
Think again.
Yes.
See, that would have been interesting because there's the villains in this, but they're not like theatrical. They're just people at the end of the day. They're just bad people.
They're just, yeah. There's a lot of burly-looking Englishmen and American.
I think
that's... not watching the dub, I don't know what accents they give the two henchmen.
Is it Jason and...
Jason and Alfred.
Alfred, that's the one.
So you've got to think an Alfred Smith is British.
Yeah. I mean, they both have that... Well, especially the big buff one. Like the butch-looking one. That is a classic... Cockney hard man look. At least what I would expect. But then again, you say it could be American. I'm intrigued now.
Yeah. I do remember that the Steams all had the appropriate accents in the dub. Obviously, you got Lloyd Steam, the grandfather was Patrick Stewart. He's shirtless for a lot of the film.
Yeah, he's very Master Roshi in that regard, I suppose. But yeah, because I never knew where the film was going to go all those years ago. And if you'd showed me him topless, I wouldn't have been like, oh no, I'm surprised.
Whereas the dad has got a chin from the Big Book of British Chins.
He does have a big chin. I think they should have killed one of them off.
Did the dad die?
No, I looked this up. I'm sure at the end it's both suggested that they both got away.
Oh, we know the granddad got away because he's in the end credits. Yeah. And we see him die in the end credits.
His father, Eddie, founding a corporate conglomerate.
Oh,
in the end credits.
Yeah, that thing in the end credits.
Maybe they all get away.
Maybe he was the mysterious villain he was going to have to go up against.
Oh, see, now we're talking. That would be a...
And there seemed to be like some sort of plot about a light bulb that his granddad had given him on his deathbed, which seemed to be involved in World War One, it can't be World War One because this is 1860, unless it happened earlier in their universe. Anyway.
Yeah, it's an alternate thing. Yes. So.
I'm not sure how, but yeah, there's a lot of, as you said, there's a lot, particularly towards the end,
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of turning of valves and watching and watching steam meters or pressure meters go up and down.
Yeah. No, the amount of... I would love to go back and just admire the use of steam in the shots, because that can't be an easy thing to make look as well as where it does.
Yeah, you get it looks like it flows correctly.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And there's a lot of it. So
yes.
The amount of, as I say, technically, I bow down. I will shake their hand, but just not for me. Just not for me.
No, there's a lot of realistic animation of fantastical things as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
I say, whenever Robert Stevenson's on screen, he always seems, because he's based on a real person and they've drawn him close to his real appearance, he always seems to move a lot more realistic than everybody else as well.
Mm. And they all move well.
Yes. But yeah, you get to see Crystal Palace destroyed. various train stations destroyed. Do they destroy Tower Bridge? They're about to crash into it at one
goes
point.
It definitely goes through it.
Yeah.
Because I remember the bit at when all the steam turns to ice at the end, which looks good, once again. That looks good. I just think they needed a bit more. Like, I'm thinking what happens chronologically. It feels like there's a fair bit that happens, but it's so long. There's points at this film where I was like, it could end. It could end any second. And it doesn't necessarily, it kind of escalates in a good way, but it just keeps going and going and going. Whereas I guess if you're having fun with that action, it's a godsend. Like it's, yourself, you say, so...
It is pretty much... The plot, though, could easily be a lot of Marvel movies today.
Yes.
And there's a MacGuffin, there's a villain, and there's a big floating thing which is going to crash down onto Earth or explode, harming a lot of people, so therefore we've got to do something with it to prevent that happening.
It's tried and tested.
It was. I'm sure it existed many times before this, but...
Yeah. So it's a perfectly fine like plot to go down, but you know, I'm disappointed. I'm because the bit that I'd seen before this time round, I was super enjoying it. The bit where they're in Manchester at the start, I liked all those characters, like the family is. I don't know. I don't even think it's his sister, the girl who he lives with.
No,
I think she's the sister of the other boy. I don't think they're related.
Because they're just staying with them. So he lives with his mum, and the other girl and her brother mention that they're staying with them because their parents have gone off to Blackpool to work.
That's right. I knew they'd mentioned Blackpool somewhere. That's correct. And I like all that bit. I like when the two thugs turn up and they're having their little scuffle in the house. And I was like, oh, this could be a great Tintin film. I don't know, I had those Tintin vibes. And then it just goes elsewhere.
Does it go elsewhere? I mean, it feels pretty much that it goes exactly where it was to
go. I don't know, maybe it's just me criticising it, trying to... I don't know, I like the bit in the village first, the kind of... him running around the house and kind of driving around the village, I think, is more exciting to me than that giant tower flying over London. I liked seeing all the farmers looking up and going, what the hell's that? They don't actually say that, but... I don't know, I like where it starts, and which is weird because at the time I didn't, but on the second watch, which is now, I like that bit better. So maybe I need to watch it again.
Yeah.
And I would finally appreciate it all the way through.
Or just watch it multiple times, appreciating about a quarter of an hour more each time.
That's true, because there's not much. I didn't last long when I first watched this. But I'm intrigued to see what was added. I think you're right with cogs and pistons and stuff, turn and whatnot. There's been a lot more of that, but I'm interested to see how it would affect the story. I think it would save a hell of a lot. 15 minutes is a lot of time. It's 206 minutes long, I believe, the one we watched.
Yeah, I think it's 15
minutes. Obviously, excluding credits.
Could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure it's a sizable chunk. Did it say on the Wikipedia for the dub? Yeah, cut down by 15 minutes is what it says on Wikipedia. So that must have been where I heard it.
Because when you said uncut, I was like, oh, it's going to be a little bit more violent. But then you don't see the dog getting punched or anything, so, which I'm pleased. That's distressing.
15 minutes of dog punching.
But I do like Scarlett. I think Miss Scarlett is she's interesting. More than what I can say for Ray, unfortunately. Camera movement is good, though.
Oh, yeah, I mean, yeah. The question is whether you buy the story or whether the story clicks with you, I think, is the only thing people are going to have complaints about. Because, yeah, technically, it's outstanding. Even just like little things, like later on when the dad's in the chair piloting the steam tower and he's got that rotating set of lenses around him. And how they sync up so he can see people further away in the room and he can appear close up to them.
Yeah. Oh, there's a lot of stuff that's so well considered. Like even when that dance scene with Scarlett, the shadows from the spotlight cast like a foreshadow around her. I don't know, that's probably got a name. You know what I mean? Where it's like cast a shadow from above. And I was like, oh, that must have took a lot of thinking. So that looked good. I wonder what that's called. I'm sure it's got a name. Yeah, oh, that looks good. Everything looks good.
Yep. And yeah, if you like destruction, you're going to be well served. And also, if you don't like steampunk stuff, don't worry. It's not like steampunk behaves nowadays.
How do they behave?
They just they cover everything in cogs and look ridiculous. I think the dad is probably the closest to being some sort of steampunk cosplayer.
Yeah, with his headgear and stuff.
But everybody else is more in period. It just happens that they build themselves a steam-powered jetpack, some steam-powered... What do you call them? Like flying machines more than aeroplanes.
Yeah.
Steam-powered armour, steam-powered submarines... Steam-powered tanks. Lots of things. If they can put steam in it, they'll get it going, apparently. Particularly if they've got the steam bowl.
And I think the most impressive thing is his wheel at the start. That is, like, that.
Well.
What? That's very impressive.
It's not impressive if you've seen Secret of Blue Water.
Oh.
Or one of those things before.
Ah, right, okay. I mean, I guess there is a giant thing with the hand thing is very impressive. It's joined to it. Each of his fingers represent
the
finger.
I'd say that's more impressive, yes.
Yeah. I like his death as well.
When he accidentally punches himself in the face with a giant little hand.
That's pretty cool.
So how the big, I can't remember what they're called, but there's one of those big wheels in Gantz as well, remember?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is low down the big wheel list, I suppose, then, in that regard. But isn't the one in Gantz a person? Oh, no, I'm thinking of the creature wheel.
No.
But that is impressive also.
It's one of the things you could spend your 100 points on instead of getting out of the game.
Yes.
on
the whole, technically outstanding. Just
not emotionally fulfilling for you.
No. And it's not even a case of they should have done that, because I think it's perfectly fine what they do. It's just doesn't do it for me. I think there'll be a lot of people who'll more than appreciate this if they get around to watching it, because I don't feel like many people talk about it.
Well, that's because a lot of people don't like it. A lot of people are in the same boat as you.
That's interesting to know. And I mean, a budget of 22 million, what's been being spent on anime things since then?
You'd have to adjust it for inflation as well.
Oh, that is true.
It's currently got 6.9 on Steam, on the IMDb.
On Steam, B, on, DB.
Yes.
Which I think is fair. I think it's a fair score. Yeah, I'm trying to see how much stuff's getting made for now. Because 20 million, it sounds like a lot. What? I guess it is 13 years ago.
It certainly is.
Gosh.
And they probably, and they spent that over 10 years, though, as well, remember. So.
Well, I think it's pretty good budgeting. That's okay. To be honest, like, yes. They've done well with the money.
Okay, his question is, how much is that 22 million caused by taking 10 years to make it?
Ah, that's a point.
What were they having to pay for, or pay 10 years worth of something on?
I feel personally more interested now in the story of the production than I do about the film itself.
Yeah.
I'd love to see, like, not a vlog, not a daily vlog of it, but like a step-by-step over the, like, six-month gaps or something to see. What, they're taking so long?
Yeah, so there's an interview from around the time on AV Club that I found, which he is incredibly non-committal on answering questions.
What year did you say this was from?
This is from around the time it came out, so 2005. Yeah. Whether that's what I said, that may have been what I meant to say rather than what I said. But so he's like, your films and short pieces tend to take place in a very chaotic world. There's a sense that everything is decaying, that there is no moral centre or stability, and things are falling apart. Does this in any way reflect your own philosophy? In my opinion, there is no sense that everything is decaying, nor that there is no moral centre or stability, and things aren't falling apart.
He sounds like an awful person to interview. So,
yeah. Well, maybe don't come in with your university analysis of his films, and I'll make that your first question.
Yeah, that's also you. Yeah, that's a good point.
This is what I think about your films. Am I right? No, you're not. The one thing that struck me watching this is that I was wondering: do some Urasawa designs look Otomo-like, or were later Otomo designs now looking Urasawa-like? Because I know Otomo was an influence on him, because there's enough interviews with Urasawa saying that. But I was like, the guy who's the boss in the Manchester docks, the fat guy, he looked very like an Urasawa character. Scarlet does at various points. And also David, when he loses his glasses and his mind and he's trying to prevent Ray from taking the steam.
Oh, yeah. I think that's a good... Yeah. I never considered that. I think it's just good, like, good-looking, human-looking characters within, like, the restrictions of what they're drawing, if that makes sense.
Yes, yeah. And the other thing, another thing that struck me is, because I know they came to the UK and did a lot of research.
I think that comes across, definitely.
Yes, yeah. You never feel like you're in some weird non-England.
Yeah. Yeah, the only thing is, I would have expected more people. Maybe this is like made up of incorrect media that I've watched and stuff, but I expected more kind of homeless, scruffy people. I thought, wasn't London really poor then? I know it's an alternate take, but as much as there was rich people, wasn't there like extremely poor?
Well,
like...
maybe that was after a giant steam tower fell on London.
That's true.
If there wasn't homeless people before this start of the film, there's definitely by the end of the film.
I mean, you see that house of children.
Yes.
At the end with the, like, one end of the house blown off. Where are they going to go?
But I also wondered the design of the steam-powered armour, having that pointy penguin face. And I was wondering... Watching that and the steam-powered tanks, I was like, is there a common source for that and what the Space Marines used to look like in Warhammer 40K? Because they also used to have very pointy faces. And Warhammer 40K is basically like a... Even though it's supposed to be set in 40,000 AD or whatever, it's pretty much just like science fiction World War One. and there's a lot of steampunk elements, quote unquote, to it without people saying, here's how to make your steampunk space marines. It's like, I'm pretty sure they're pretty steampunky already. They go around in tanks which look like pre-World War One tanks.
Yeah, maybe there is, because they do have that weird nose thing.
Yeah, it's like it's such a specific design, which makes me wonder if they took that from something and whether the weirdos at Games Workshop were also aware of the same source.
I'm sure the Cylons in the original Battles... Yeah, they have a similar... In the original Battlestar Galactica, the Cylons have that...
Like, yeah, but that's because they try to look like Darth Vader, though. They are knock-off Darth Vaders.
Who did it first? Who did the nose thing first? That's the question. Because it's a good look. It's
yeah.
Maybe it's just like a more... Because that's where they would speak from?
I think there's definitely been armour which looked like that, but...
Yeah.
I wonder if somebody somewhere in the 1900s had a science fiction idea of around the time of the Industrial Revolution and steam taking off. Maybe somebody at some point said, oh, you know what would be cool? If we could have steam-powered soldiers, that would be amazing. Because that sounds like the sort of thing somebody would have done and said at the time. And it also sounds like the sort of thing that Otomo and the people at Games Workshop might have picked up on. But I am ignorant, and I could not find anything. When I looked for penguin-faced armour, got nothing.
Nothing at all? Well, there must be something cute.
I think I got something not related. Penguin-faced armour. Let me have a look. Armoured penguin crossword puzzle maker is what it is.
Unless it's not meant to be penguin-like, that's just the wrong search term.
I could be. Maybe it's puffins.
Beak face armor.
Oh, yeah, I think beak was what I originally used, yes. Yeah, so you do get, like, more medieval stuff.
Yeah, it's definitely a thing.
It is definitely a thing. Maybe it's just the medieval look is what they've taken. Because I can definitely see that being the case for both. But yeah, my knowledge of pulps is probably better than a lot of people's, but not good enough to go, oh, I know where that's from. I do wonder whether Steam Boy is like... There was a pulp character called Air Boy. And I wonder if that's a deliberate allusion or whether it's just an accidental one.
When was a Rocketeer out?
Rocketeer, the comics were 80s, I want to say, in the film early 90s.
Yeah, 91 for the film.
Yeah, that's a film.
And that's a good film.
But obviously that's based on an earlier serial from the, I want to say, 40s, which they used to show on BBC on the kids' slot during the summertime. Was it King of the Rocket Men, I think, was one of them.
That's a cool design, the Rocketeer.
King of the Rocket Man is a 1949 12-chapter black and white Republic movie serial.
Speaking of suits.
Yes.
How on earth does Ray... There's a point where there's a guy in one of the flying machines, crashes, he goes and fixes it up, and then he wears the man's suit.
Was it his suit?
See, I thought he stole it off the dude.
Yeah, I wasn't sure whether he did.
Thinking about it now sounds weird.
I thought he might have just got it out of the...
cupboard.
Yeah, the cupboard at the building.
Yeah, maybe you're right. But long story short, it fits him fine.
Yes.
My point was going to be, how did it fit?
But yeah, steam. I guess you would be the answer. Yeah,
steam packed, vacuum sealed.
King of the Rocket Men is what I'm thinking of. That's the 1940 thing with the guy with a mask and a jetpack. Which I'm pretty sure the Rocketeer was probably inspired by. Yeah, Rocketeer is one of those films where I was like, oh, really looking forward to the Rocketeer, really looking forward to the Rocketeer. Watch the Rocketeer. Why was I looking forward to the Rocketeer?
I mean, I don't remember it being awful, but I remember watching it as a kid. Things change.
I remember Timothy Dalton being good as the bad guy. But I think maybe the guy they got playing the Rocketeer is a bit bland.
They need someone like Brendan Fraser.
That you're probably correct. That is probably what they did need, yes.
Like, he... Like, I always think of him in that kind of swashbuckling... Well,
yeah, and Hollywood did until his hair started going.
Yeah, poor guy. And he started piling on the weight. What's he doing now, I wonder?
I've no idea.
Oh, I miss Brendan Fraser. He's good.
Well, yeah. Let me see what he's doing. He's in post-production on Behind the Curtain of Night and The Field. The Field is a Bollywood thriller.
Oh.
So maybe that's where he is now.
Well, if they ever do a Rocketeer 2, which I'm surprised hasn't been considered. Everything else gets got, so why not?
He was also in 6 episodes of The Affair.
Ah.
And he's got a couple of TV shows coming up as well.
Well, apparently last year, Disney's Rocketeer 2 will have a black female lead. So maybe Rocketeer 2 is happening.
Well, maybe it is. And of course he was being sarcastic when The Mummy flopped. Tom Cruise, because obviously lots of people were annoyed that he wasn't in it, for a start.
Well, I was always under the impression that is a totally different Mummy franchise.
It is, yes.
So I don't get... Because I thought a lot of people were thinking that.
But people wouldn't know that. They'd see The Mummy. They don't...
And think Fraser.
Yes, people don't necessarily follow the publicity or the marketing. They just see The Mummy and they go, I liked The Mummy films. There's not been one since 2008. Let's go watch
it. It must be the same.
Oh, wait. Tom Cruise, is it? I don't want to see that. And it turns out they probably made the right choice.
I was kind of ready for it. I like Tom Cruise, but I've still not seen that, so I'm sure I can wait.
He's on topic, because that's pulpy as well, so that ties in nicely to Seaboy, which ties into your belief that, yes, he would make a good Rocketeer. He would make less good Steamboy, though. He's probably a little old to play race
Steam. And there's nobody balmy enough in the film, because everyone's quite down to earth. Really?
Is it Simon? The guy who's trying to sell...
Oh, yeah, he's a bit eccentric, weapons. But he's a bit older than Mr. Fraser. Then again, who knows now?
Who knows? So we haven't done the... We've done this, we've covered the short piece stuff when we went to Leeds...
Yeah.
So, what other Otomo things haven't we covered, is the question. There's that noodle advert series. filmography. So, the live-action Mushishi, he directed that. I hadn't realised that. Live-action World Department Horror. Oh, we haven't done Neo Tokyo and Robot Carnival. The things which constantly come up on our podcast.
Oh, that's right, yeah. One day.
Yes.
I'll be interested about that Mushishi live action. I didn't...
Also, we've never done the good half of... We never did the good half of the JoJo's Bizarre Adventure OVAs, did we?
No, we didn't.
No. He did an episode of that.
Wow. Why has he not done something since 2013? What's he doing?
Well, I don't know. I was going to say comics, but he doesn't appear to be doing comics either. But maybe he hasn't, no one's updated his Wikipedia since then.
Oh, true. Do you reckon he's rich? Just. Staff question, but
it's not even crossed my mind.
Because he's done good things, but he's not like got copious amounts of.
But
like,
I don't. Because on here is he used to do a load of adverts and stuff.
Hmm.
So I don't know whether he still keeps his hand in there. I don't know. I'm sure he makes do. I'm sure
he's not working in a shop somewhere.
Yes. I'm sure people still buy copies of Akira.
I nearly bought that big new box they did. It was like 80 quid or something. It's like a brand new it's not like redone or anything, but there's a huge box set that came out, and I was like, oh, I've got to get that. £106 it's at now.
Is this the comics?
Oh, sorry, yes, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's got all of them in a big box. It looks pretty good.
Yeah, I need to finish rebuying it.
See, I got a few of them cheap at a charity shop, but the corners are all curled up, and I can't display that. People walk into the house and walk straight back out if they see that.
I was going to say, I can't display it because I've run out of room.
Go digitally and just boast that you've got it on your tablet. Guess what I've got here.
Rightio, anything else to add? Obviously, you can buy it now. You can watch it now on Netflix, at least if you're in the UK. You might be out of luck elsewhere.
Easy to get. I'm sure you can get it on eBay, the original.
Oh, yeah,
That DVD release I've got for pennies. Buttons.
Yeah, it's used for £1.36 on Amazon at the moment, the DVD is.
Deluxe 2 DVD box set. Gift box set. Who's going to give that as a gift? I'd be furious. £9.99. That's pretty good, though. That's pretty good.
Righty-ho. Anything to plug, Anthony?
If you go onto my YouTube channel, which is Ant Askew, I've just finished Bloodborne. Did everything in the game, apart from a few extra bosses, actually, so I didn't even realise they existed until looking online afterwards. But next week I start Demon's Souls.
Are those original bosses, or are they palette swap, do something slightly different than existing bosses?
Oh, no, that's one thing I will praise those games for, is they're never that kind of copy and pasted, cut and chopped. They're never that bad. Take ideas from other games, previous games, like previous Dark Souls games. But no. I won't have a bad word said. Loved Bloodborne.
And I've got nothing to plug. So, there you go.
Nothing at all?
Nothing at all.
Not even Twitter?
No. Oh. People find me on Twitter anyway, so. But that is Dynamite in the Brain, finished for another week. If you liked it, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or your podcast aggregator of choice. Next week on the show, the episode of Man v. Feud that I forgot to release 2 weeks ago. Goodbye.
Bye.
Your life's gone down the drain. Your body's wrecked with pain. There's just one thing to blame. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain.